Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. Chapter 1, text number 6. Adunniha Mahabhaga
Adunniha Mahabhaga
Ditaira Narikanda Nanokra Yatananiya Tanme Vyakyatam Arvasi
Tanme Vyakyatam Arvasi
Adneham Mahabhaga
Adneham Mahabhaga
Itaivam Narakanda
Itaivam Narakanda
Nanokra Yatananiya
Right now.
In this material world.
Mahabhaga.
A greatly opulent and fortunate Sukadeva Goswami.
So that. Eva.
Indeed. Narakam. All the hellish conditions.
Into which the impious are put.
Nanaha.
Human beings.
Nana.
Varieties of.
Ugra.
Terrible.
Vedinana. Conditions of suffering. Na iyat.
May not undergo.
That.
May.
To me.
Yajatum.
Ahasi.
Please describe.
Sensation. A greatly fortunate and opulent Shukadeva Goswami. Now kindly tell me how human beings may be saved from having to enter hellish conditions in which they suffer terrible pains. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. In the 26th chapter of the 5th canto, Shukadeva Goswami has explained that people who commit simple acts are forced to enter hellish planets and suffer. Now Maharaj Brihi, being a devotee, is concerned with how this can be stopped. A Vaishnava is paradukha dukhi. In other words, he has no personal troubles, but he is very unhappy to see others in trouble. Pallava Maharaj said, "My Lord, I have no personal problems, for I have learned how to glorify your transcendental qualities and thus enter a trance of ecstasy. I do have a problem, however, for I am simply thinking of these rascals and fools who are busy with maya sukha, temporary happiness, without knowledge of devotional service unto you. This is the problem faced by a Vaishnava. Because the Vaishnava fully takes shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he personally has no problems. But because he has compassion to the fallen, conditioned souls, he is always thinking of plans to save them from their hellish life in this body and the next. Kriti Maharaj therefore anxiously wanted to know from Sukadeva Goswami how humanity can be saved from gliding down to hell. Sukadeva Goswami had already explained how people enter hellish life, and he could also explain how they could be saved from it. Intelligent men must take advantage of these instructions. Unfortunately, however, the entire world is lacking Krishna consciousness, and therefore people are suffering from the grossest ignorance and do not even believe in a life after this one. To convince them of the next life is very difficult because they have become almost mad in their pursuit of material enjoyment. Nevertheless, our duty, the duty of all sane men, is to save them. Maharaj Guruji is a representative of one who can save them. So, of course, very nice verse here. Indicating the mood of the Vaishnava, that mood of Kriti Maharaj, who's very eager to try and help the conditioned souls. But also we see in the last sentence of this purport, Prabhupada says, nevertheless, our duty. So Prabhupada indicated, yes, I have the same view. I'm taking this up. And he says, our duty and the duty of all sane men. Everyone should literally become Vaishnava and have that mood of compassion. So the duty of all sane men is to save them. So this is the mood of Srila Prabhupada. If it wasn't for Srila Prabhupada, of course, we have no real understanding of Kriti Maharaj or Bhagavatam. We've never even perhaps never heard of it. If we would have heard of the Bhagavatam, we may have heard of it the wrong way. By Krishna's arrangement, we're very close to Prabhupada's disappearance day. Then this is verse, just a couple of days later, so to continue the same thing, glorifying Srila Prabhupada. And to make it more obvious to me, this is on the next page of the purport. This beautiful picture of Srila Prabhupada. So to jump over and not discuss Srila Prabhupada, to have this ability to some degree or another, and this personifying to the great degree this Prabhupada, and how we can follow in his footsteps to do that would be an obvious choice, given all the hints that I'm giving here. So, so basically, the as we'll see in this chapter, the whole world is in ignorance. So many of them don't even believe in the next life. And they take the very suffering condition of now as a form of happiness. Basically, the happiness in this world is mentioned in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Happiness in this world is all a relief from suffering. I mean, a little relief from suffering, that's the best you can get for happiness in this world. So it's something. So therefore the Chaitanya Charitamrita describes the sometimes the punishment where they take someone, they dump their head under the water until they almost think they're going to die, and the pain in their lungs, and then they cook them up. And they take a big breath and go, ah, now I'm happy. And then they push them back down again. So happiness in this world is like that. So they A very foolish person would take that sort of, that little breath in between all the punishment that's happened. And the whole thing is a suffering condition. And many of them, even if they follow religious scriptures, thinking that there may be some God, some karma in this life, or the next life. So in the Gita describes those who understand that we're an eternal soul, and there's a soul in every body, that's knowledge in the mode of goodness. So something learning is very, very rare. But in this age, mostly there may be some knowledge in the mode of passion, but people speculate in all sorts of different ways. And even speculate on what the meaning of the scriptures is. So they really don't know, they're very unsure, could be this, could be that, but they have a lot of speculative theories. And of course, a huge proportion of the world is in the mode of ignorance, where they just accept this body is everything, and there's nothing more than that, and I just live for the body just like an animal, like that. So in the civilized part of this world, mostly perhaps in passion and ignorance, then many others are in ignorance. And therefore, as described in So, we understand from Gita that all performance of sacrifices, religion, etc., are meant for understanding Krishna, who is the ultimate goal. But because the conditioned souls do not know anything beyond sense gratification, they study the way to that end. But through fruitive activities in sense gratification, regulated by the Vedic rituals, one is gradually elevated to Krishna consciousness. So even if people follow some sort of moral or religious type of rules or regulations to upgrade their life, to avoid acting incompletely in the mode of ignorance, acting like animals, so to have some sort of sense of humanity, morality and religiosity, even when they follow those scriptures, they're still doing that based around the enjoyment of the body, the enjoyment, their sense of gratification in this world now and in the future. So if they go to different churches and mosques, it's because they want to enjoy now in this world, and then if they feel that yes, at the end of this life, we'll go to heaven, then I want to enjoy there as well. In the same way I'm enjoying here. Like that. So, but they don't understand the nature of the soul.
That the soul,
does not actually require any enjoyment from anything within the whole material creation. So within the entire material creation, throughout millions and billions of births, There is not one thing the soul will come across for its enjoyment that it actually requires from its here existence. Whether on this earthly planet, in the animal species, or in the heavenly planets, there is nothing in that whole, that through many, many millions of lived lives, there's not one thing the soul actually requires in its material world. But they don't understand, because what the soul requires, the soul is part, the soul is has nothing to do with the body, it is not a product of the body. The soul is composed of Satchitananda. The very form of the soul is of eternality, consciousness or knowledge, and bliss. Eternity. It's very, let's say, substance is bliss itself. The why it, so it doesn't have to be. But the soul expands that bliss unlimitedly by coming into contact with the Supreme Soul, who is the reservoir of all bliss. So, for the soul, this eternal happy position is in the spiritual world in relationship with the Supreme Soul. But they do not know that. But this verse is describing that still, because people are interested in self-sense verification, the Vedas do regulate them so they don't end up in hellish conditions. And that is a very slow process over many, many, many lifetimes, and especially in Kali Yuga, it's practically impossible to follow the rules and regulations. So therefore, in this purport, so therefore, if people are following a religious process properly, or moral codes, or any sort of self-sacrifice for the benefit of others, one should applaud that. One should encourage that. Even people who are in the army, sometimes they, you know, some people go to the army because they just want to kill people, even put bombs. But some people go into, you know, the armed forces, you know, because they actually firmly believe that they're actually protecting innocent people. So they're prepared to give up their life for the benefit of others. Some people, you know, do all sorts of charity. Some people, like to give food, some do things. They may not be giving prasadam, but it's a selfless act. So all these things lead to Krishna consciousness, as mentioned in the 12th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. So they should be applauded. It's a gradual process. But here, at the end of this verse, Prabhupada says, although the ignorant man is not to be disturbed in his activities, a slightly developed Krishna conscious person may directly be engaged in the service of the Lord without waiting for other Vedic formulas. For this fortunate man, there is no need to follow the Vedic rituals, because by direct Krishna consciousness one can have all the results one would otherwise derive from following the prescribed duties. And so actually, for those who want to help people in this material world, the Vedas say you can, if you know the purpose of the Vedas is to please the Supreme Lord and serve the Supreme Lord, if you do that, then all living entities and yourself are automatically benefited. So instead of trying to save, doing altruistic, philanthropic work, one should try to save the soul. And as Prabhupada gives the example, one should not, should not save the dress of a person who's drowning, but save the drowning man himself. And therefore, the process of doing that, protecting people from the material element, its material nature, is described in Bhagavad-gita 3.14 that when Lord Krishna is worshipped, the demigods who are different limbs of the Lord are also automatically worshipped. Therefore, there is no separate need to worship the demigods. For this reason, the devotees of the Lord who are in Krishna consciousness offer food to Krishna and then eat, a process which nourishes the body spiritually. By such action, not only are past sinful reactions in the body vanquished, but the body becomes immunized to all contamination of material nature. When there is an epidemic disease, an antiseptic vaccine protects a person from the attack of such an epidemic. Similarly, food offered to Lord Vishnu and then taken by us makes us sufficiently resistant to material affection, and one who is accustomed to this practice is called a devotee of the Lord. Therefore, a person in Krishna consciousness who eats only food offered to Krishna can counteract all reactions of past material infections which are impediments to the progress of self-realization. On the other hand, one who does not do so continues to increase the volume of sinful action, and this prepares his next body to resemble hogs and dogs, to suffer the resultant reactions of all sins. The material world is full of contamination, and one who is immunized by accepting prasadam of the Lord, food offered to Vishnu, is safe from the attack, whereas one who does not do so becomes subject to contamination. So, here, and of course this is part of Prithi Maharaj's question, and the answers that will be given by Sukadeva Goswami in this discussion, is that how do we stop, what is the easiest process for stopping the general mass of people from becoming hogs and dogs or going to the hellish planets? And the Vedas prescribe a whole range of prayasita or atonement, one must atone. Those processes of atonement are very, very severe, especially for people who are attached to living the good life of sense gratification. And then, you know, then they have to, it's very hard for them to perform any sort of difficulty, and the atonements are very difficult. Apart from that, because their hearts always remain pure, they, as soon as they've atoned, they confess their sin, done some penances, some Hail Marys, again they're back into the same business. As Prabhupada said, he said of Christianity, it's a Sunday and Monday business. A Sunday you confess, you do some fancy. Monday back to the same business. So, therefore, but prasada immunizes one to the point where it frees one from sinful reactions. One doesn't have to take birth as a dog or a hog or go to the heaven hellish planets. But it also purifies the heart to the point where one gradually is placed with some higher taste coming from the bliss of the soul, where one loses one's taste for these pale things. So that process is being recommended, something that can actually follow. Here, of course, in the previous canto, Sukadeva Goswami has described the hellish planets. Now, not everyone goes to those hellish planets. You know, people can become, if they're sinful, they're drinking wine and eating each other things. They can take a human birth, which is a lot of suffering. They can, if they're more sinful, then they go into the animal species sometimes for a few births. These are mentioned in some scriptures. You might say they take 3 births or 7, and then back to the animal. If they're very sinful, they may be cast down, as Krishna says, in the even very lowest species of life. When there is excess sinful activity, it can't be burned up in so many lifetimes of suffering like that, and one goes to the other side. But what you do see is the people who preach religion these days do not know the easy process of counteraction by devotional service of the Supreme Lord, eating prasad, chanting his holy name, etc. They don't know that process. And they do engage people in very severe punishments and atonements for discretions on the path of spiritual life, but still, despite those very extremely harsh, even violent methods to try and get people to follow different principles, none of it works. So, for instance, in some of the Southeast Asia, you know, the young boys and girls, teenagers, are not able to associate. And if they catch them associated, they beat them with canes, and they put them in jail. And if you get caught, you're going to get punished badly. But despite all of that, they can't stop a young boy and a young girl as a teenager from getting together. It's not possible. No matter how they beat them, that they will risk their life. They will risk their beating. They will risk going to jail. But you cannot stop them. And they quote, the justification is, you do this, you go to hell. And you will suffer a terrible damnation. I'm actually doing you a favor. So they're very, very harsh, but actually there is a process of removing both the sinful reactions and also removing the desire to commit sinful activities. And that process is very enjoyable, and that's called Krishna consciousness. So, and this of course is what Srila Prabhupada, therefore, the leaders of the world who want to actually help people have to be conversant with all the scriptures for moral codes and they have to be conversant with the spiritual scriptures. Prabhupada describes that 322. And this is the nature of Srila Prabhupada, that he can discuss. You know, he would discuss with the Muslims, with the Christians, and they would begin to discuss something, they would present their philosophy, and Prabhupada would question, where is that written? Even their own philosophy. Where is that written in the Quran? That is not there. Why are you saying that? Where is that in the Bible? He knew all the scriptures. You could speak to him on any philosophy, and he would, because he understood it. Yes, that should be accepted, but not that. Why are you speaking this nonsense like that? So actually one has to know the Vedas and how to present the revealed scriptures, the highest spiritual realizations and process in the face of the foolish arguments of those who are presenting religion, moral codes. One has to understand both perfectly like that in order to cut through the ignorance and the nonsense and get the real message out. Therefore, in verse 22, it describes that. Verse 21, the same third chapter, Yadyala Shinti Shesasa Tat Vatarobina Hasaya Kaman Kuruti Lokasarna Bhattati. Whatever action great man performs, common men follow, However, the standards he sets, for example, to acts, all the world pursues. And he starts his purpose, the people in general always require a leader who can teach the public by practical behaviour. At the end of his purport, he says this: all such natural leaders have a great responsibility to their dependents. Therefore, they must be conversant with standard books of moral and spiritual codes. So, because people will present their moral codes in their books, but they can be, they should be followed, where it's actually giving them some progress to the right goal. But those moral and religious codes should not be followed if they're actually misrepresenting the scriptures and blatantly encouraging sense gratification, violence, and obstruction on the path of progress. So one has to be able to recognize that. And one has to be able to implement that in the practical life. So, therefore, basically, as we can see here, such a person is the Vaishnava. And until a person comes in contact with a Vaishnava or a Vaishnavi, they're still taking one birth after another, despite their moral codes, despite their religiosity and standards and what have you. They're still taking one birth after another, because all of it is not based upon the soul, and the soul's eternal relationship with the Supreme Soul. And unless we come to that position, one cannot remain fixed on any path. One will always be diverted somehow to some subtle or gross material enjoyment. So one has to come in contact with the Vaishnava, who is fixed in self-realization of their internal spirit soul and fixed in their understanding of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, her eternal relationship with Him, and activities on the spiritual path in relation to the Lord, which protect us in this world and take us back to the spiritual world. Therefore, Akura, in his Yoga Akura, all over the world people offering prayers and chanting different verses from the scriptures. Akura achieved perfection by doing the same thing, offering prayers, the essence of verses, and the essence of his verses is that one has to, if one is fortunate to come in contact with the pure devotee of the Lord, that will attract the Lord's mercy, then the Lord will allow that person to associate with pure devotees and serve them, and that will allow them to attain full God realization, self realization, perfection. So, in one of his verses, he repeats this a couple of times, but this is Akura, Canto 10, chapter 46, number 28. Being thus fallen, I am approaching your lotus feet, O Lord Krishna, because although the impure can never attain your feet, I think it is nevertheless possible by your mercy. Only when one's material life has ceased, O lotus name of Lord, can one develop consciousness of you by serving your pure devotees. So, Srila Vishnu Chakravarti uses this purport to summarize the points. What is the process of coming in contact with the devotee, getting the Lord's mercy, serving the devotee? What is that exact step-by-step process? He says that the Vishnu Chakravarti, of course, is Guru Praya. Though what I have said about myself is true, I surrender unto you. This surrender is hard to attain for the impure. So, even people who follow religion, you don't see them surrendering to God. It's for some of the other impure purposes related to the material world. But it is surely possible if I attain your mercy. Krishna asks, when will you get my mercy? The Guru replies, O lotus male one, when one worships your pure devotees, consciousness of you develops. Krishna, when will that happen? The Guru, when a person's material life is finished. Krishna, when is one's material life finished? A Guru, when he receives causeless mercy. So, Vishuddha Chakravarti IV summarizes that like this. By this reasoning, first, there is the causeless mercy of the pure devotees. So the pure devotees, they know people are not going to, race to the devotee, all the people, you walk around the street to the back of the gear, no one's going to stop you and say, oh, can you teach you something about the gear? You've got a gear in your hand. Oh, can we sit for a minute and just have a chat? I've got a couple of hours to spare. I was going to work, but I'm going to stop that. I just want to sit in there. No one's going to do that. So, but somehow, if one has done some little service unknowingly to the devotees, or unwillingly, devotees go out, sell the book, didn't really want the book, gave him some money, put it at home, sat there. But that little devotion service, purchasing one Prabhupada's books, will give fruit that Krishna will give the mercy. This person I will bring into the association of faith. I will give them that incentive to come into their association in a mood to hear. So he makes some arrangement. So, as you said, by this reason, first it's the causeless mercy of pure devotees. So it all begins with some, the galaxy creatures of pure devotees. They are traveling all over the world. The Prabhupada traveled the world. At the age of 70 to 82, traveled the world, traveled the continent 12 times. 10 times in 12 years, establishing 108 temples and distributing thousands of books, which are unbelievable. How many people come into contact with him in that time? Millions and millions. Still today. Still today, I quite often go into the homes of different people and they tell me, I saw Prabhupada. My grandfather, my mother saw it. And I can understand from that point that whole family is being drawn in by Krishna's mercy. Somehow. The tiniest little association. And it says, followed by the beginning of cessation of material life. So that's when our material life begins to finish. That little, the galaxy greed. Then by serving pure devotees, one develops Krishna consciousness. Krishna arranged that you can have the opportunity to associate in service. And he says this sequence has been previously described. So previously, in the previous chapter, the Guru offered a whole lot of prayers, he came to the same conclusion. He only will come to the same conclusion, which is the essence of all understanding of the scriptures. So, now, therefore, Prabhupada, he knows this process, the Vaishnavas know this process. If people want to give Krishna's mercy, send the devotees out preaching, and if they can somehow or another, and devotees, they're Paralipadulki. They are unhappy to see the unhappiness of others. That is Vaishnava. And so they're not really happy God. Prabhupada was in Vrindavan. He could chant and be in complete bliss and ecstasy, just like Balaram Maharaj, enjoy prasad. He could go to Vasi. A pure devotee of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, they call. He just can't go back to God. He could sit and relish from above the tongue daily. He had nothing to worry about. So he left that position. And of course, the example is not just for the general mass of people, but the example of Prabhupada was also for devotees. That we should follow the move of Prabhupada and become part of the duty. That's our duty. Actually, it's not so much optional, but the same. And you understand Srila Prabhupada, what he wants us to do is our duty. So, now, that move, of course, when people do come into contact with Krishna consciousness, of course, we have a tendency sometimes to take the Krishna consciousness in the same way we take it in any other religious process. That what's in it for me? So that's natural. And one of the things that the devotees do is that we teach people, if you want to be really happy, just do what I'm doing and you'll be happy. So the devotee has to be happy. If the devotee is in grihastha life, they have to be happy. They have to be so expert, their wife's happy, the husband's happy, children are happy, the parents are happy, and all the neighbors are happy. And then people think, I want to be a devotee like that. Now, so here, the devotee's mood is, I'm happy to see the unhappiness of others. I'm not seeking my own happiness because I don't have any problems. But for the sake of pleasing Krishna, they will take the happy position. So, we were discussing in the 10th canto about Kuja, the queens of Dwarka, and the gopis of Vrindavan. Now, of course, Srila Prabhupada is following in the footsteps of the Vrajavasis. The highest of which is the gopis. And that was taught by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who also exemplified Hari Kuduki, one who, whose happiness was in the happiness of helping others to come to Krishna consciousness. And that is the, he is the mood of Radharani, and Radharani's mood is that, you know, she becomes happy to see others doing service. She's thinking, you know, what am I doing for Krishna? If this soul does some service to Krishna, Krishna becomes happy, then that is my happiness. She has that view. So, Kuja, she engaged in Krishna's service. But her mood was, I shall enjoy happiness through my service to Krishna. And the emotional mood of Krishna shall enjoy was not quite developed. But the acharyas point out that such a mood, it's not, don't follow that. It can get you in all sorts of trouble, especially on the imitating. Being a lover of Krishna can get you in all sorts of trouble. But Kuja's position is that she would become purified and actually develop love for Krishna like that. But it's just showing that, you know, that is the beginning process anyway. The queens of Dwarka, their love for Krishna is very elevated. That they take happiness in Krishna's happiness. But the gopis, They do not care for their own happiness. They only care for Krishna's happiness. They're prepared to go to hell for Krishna shall be happy. And you know, the different pastimes. But, as the Acharyas point out, if their being happy brings Krishna's happiness, then they'll take that happy position. So therefore, the devotee, you know, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, it describes that the devotees, they splash around in the ocean of nectar, ananda vivaranam. The Sankirtan movement is an ocean of nectar. There's visharam, there's festivals, but we're not so much interested in our own relishing of the facilities of the Krishna, of the the temple facilities, the festival facilities. But the devotees certainly want to set the example of how to enjoy such happiness. Otherwise, how do we follow? So there are many devotees who are interested in the facilities of Krishna consciousness, the byproducts, not byproducts. But we want them to be attracted. That's a good thing. We want people to be attracted. The elevated devotee is not envious of another person if they see, oh, this person is very happy in their service. They want that. And if I devotee, they see another devotee enjoying some nice service, they're thinking, oh, how is that to this person? You know, why should they be enjoying the best players for making gardens? Whatever it is. Yeah. Why should they have that opportunity to do that service? What is it? Then neophyte mentality. There's a competition, but the elevated devotee, following the footsteps of Srila Prabhupada, following the footsteps of the Vajrasis, if they see that the devotees are really happy, they have some facility, some service, some position, whatever, then okay, that is wonderful. That they've taken this process, and by that process, and material things will gradually purify like that, and gradually they will go back to Godhead. And that will attract so many other people like that. But for Srila Prabhupada, he had temples all over the world, but he didn't go to the temple to enjoy himself. He went there to show us how to be blissful through the facility that Krishna, that Prabhupada had made for us to enjoy. Prabhupada said, if my spiritual master had asked me to go preach in the forest, I would have gone to the forest. But he didn't. He asked me to go to the west. So I went there. Prabhupada didn't go to the west and make so many temples or have, you know, a nice facility to enjoy. And then, when the Mahaprasha comes, I will be the first in line. He would have gone to the forest. The guru is happy, and that is a way to somehow speak Krishna. I will do that. Anyway, so that is part of the dukkhi. We follow in the footsteps of Srila Prabhupada, and in this way we can also become part of the dukkhi, aspiring part of the dukkhis, and make then Krishna really loves that movie because it's the Braja Basi movie and the movie of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So I'll leave it there if anyone has any questions or comments. Oh, good. Hare Krishna.